Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover and Lucy Milazzo. Cambridge 105 Radio.
The hugely popular Open Cambridge Heritage Weekend will still go ahead this September, but like so many events, it's taking on a virtual format. Open Cambridge is run by the public engagement team at the University of Cambridge, and they want your help in putting it all together. Sue Long is coordinating it all, and she joins us now. Good morning to you, Sue.
Morning, Julian. Lovely to be with you.
Yeah, good to hear from you as well. So explain, how will all of this work then?
Well, that's a really good question. Obviously, I'm in quite uncharted territory at the moment, never having run anything virtual or online before. But what we're hoping to do is to get some of our usual Open Cambridge coordinators offering building tours, museum tours, video chats with gardeners, local historians, the kind of usual things that we would have in Open Cambridge, but they will be going online. And they'll either be live online or they'll be pre-recorded and they'll be available throughout the three-day weekend, which is on from Friday the 11th of September to Sunday the 13th.
I'm normally away when Open Cambridge is on, and surprisingly enough, the event I normally go to has been cancelled. So if nothing else, I'll be able to sit in front of my laptop for all or part of that weekend and take everything on board. Presumably, you're even more reliant than you normally are on people in order to get this up and running.
We are really. What we're reliant on is people, dipping their toes in the water, doing something that is completely different, probably something that's a bit out of their comfort zone. But fundamentally, I've already discovered it's not really a mystic science, doing some of this stuff. And I think that, contributions of all sorts will be very welcome. And it might be a little bit more downscaled from previous years. And obviously we're working towards a bumper 2021. But I think whatever we have will just be a lovely opportunity. What I'm just is thinking different this year, by the way, is that we're inviting local people to submit either their favourite lockdown photos or an unusual photograph of the city. And they can submit these to us, and we will include them in an online gallery on the Open Cambridge website.
Yeah, nice.
Sounds brilliant. And I'm just thinking, Sue, that sometimes these things do provide opportunities in ways that we don't foresee. And perhaps because you don't have to physically open somewhere up, but you can go down there with a camera or one single person, people might see places that they wouldn't normally have seen.
I completely agree. And I also think that sometimes in Open Cambridge, we have 90 events, more or less, 12,000 visitors, sometimes in about 2.5 days. That's a fantastic ask. And, often it gets very booked up, overbooked, people can't get on certain trips or tours. So that's not going to be a problem online, because everybody can fit in, everybody's got access to it. And if people want to add something of a personal touch to it themselves, I really just want to reassure people, we don't need anything too polished or slick, but we'd like to hear some real people stories from the local community. Anybody can do that as long as they can do that themselves. We're not looking for a BAFTA award-winning film. We're looking for something local and interesting, and perhaps a story that we wouldn't normally have thought of, if people come forward and suggest things to us.
I guess it gives an opportunity, doesn't it, for, I guess, everyday stories from people and things that they might have, say, at the bottom of their garden, or something which happened in their street and their part of Cambridge many years ago that perhaps isn't necessarily known about.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's exactly the sort of thing I'm looking for. Also, there's lots of people keeping this city going in the university and in the colleges and in the city council, the county council, many city institutions. They've got incredibly important jobs. You know, we don't often hear necessarily about some of those things. You know, if you don't think what you're doing is interesting, think again, because it may be that you have got a local story to share. You have got a secret place in Cambridge that you haven't seen anywhere on any websites or part of Open Cambridge. Now, I can't guarantee that we can include everything in this year, but certainly we would like to hear from local people for 2021, because, you know, we think it would be nice for people to make suggestions about what they would like to see open in Cambridge when it really is open.
I know in previous years you've been able to open up parts of the colleges that we wouldn't necessarily normally get to see, and also there's this nuclear bunker, isn't there, which is hidden away in one of the council buildings. It would be great to take a look at that on online service.
Well, I've approached everybody who's offered events in the past 4 or 5 years in Open Cambridge. And, you know, response has been a little bit slow currently, but we are getting it off the ground and we are trying to support people. But yeah, I agree with you. Way more people could have a look round something, for example, like that bunker, than online, than they would be able to do in person. But yeah, we have lots of building tours. We have churches, mosques. We've had shops in the past. Always colleges, different colleges, some faculties in the university, fantastic museum tours.
So, Sue, if somebody is listening this morning and thinks, I know, I'll do something about my garden shed, because my garden shed has a most fantastic history behind it. How do they get in touch to put that forward?
They can email us at opencambridge@admin.cam.ac.uk. All our contact details are on the Open Cambridge website, so just Google that. And, you know, we look forward to hearing from people. We are going to be running as many of the usual events as we can, but this year, as I say, we're inviting people, local people, to get involved in as well. And please send some photos, even if you don't want to do anything else, if you've been out photographing things during the lockdown period, please send us those photos, and we'd like to include them on the Open Cambridge Gallery, because we think that would be really, really interesting. And if you think you're only a snapper like me, still send the photos in, because, you know, it's just really lovely to have. It would be really lovely to have them.
Is it sometimes a case of asking people to stand back and look at things differently again? So it might be that they've got a war bunker in their garden. They just take that for granted. That's always been there. Yeah. But you need people to suddenly stand back and think, do you know what? That's quite unusual.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, I was walking down the river in the direction of Water Beach recently, and there's some quite interesting concrete buildings along there. You know, there's all sorts of things, you're absolutely right, that we just take for granted. We walk past them, or they are in our garden or in our allotment or something. And the theme, by the way, for the National Heritage Open Days is hidden nature. And I think that gives us a lot of latitude with regard to our parks, our commons, along by the river. So if anybody's got any nice photos of those places, that would be really lovely as well. And, you know, lockdown photos would be interesting, because you're seeing the city from a completely different perspective.
Yeah, it's almost, it's good that things are getting back to normal, but it's my little walk around the corner from home to the studio in the morning, it's you can just feel that the sounds are changing. They're going not quite back to how they were, but the deathly silence that greeted me for the first 6 weeks or so of lockdown was something else. Sue, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm so pleased to be able to come along and talk about it.
No, when you've got everything sorted, when you know what you're going to offer everybody, come back and we can let everybody know what they can see during the Open Cambridge Heritage Weekend.
Yeah, that would be great. And yours is an ideal station because it is so local. So that would be really great if you don't mind me coming back closer to the time.
You are very, very welcome to do so, Sue. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Have a good day, both of you. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
That's Sue Long. She is from Open Cambridge. And that takes us to 20 after 8.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Attempts are being made to reassure parents sending their children back to school after the Department of Education implemented a series of measures. However, there are mums and dads who are anxious or reluctant to send their children back for the final weeks of term, despite the obvious educational benefits. Psychologist Emma Kenny is on the line. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us.
Oh,
I think, yes, anxious, reluctant, parents are all of these things, a little bit confused. At the end of term would really only be a few weeks away in normal life at the moment. So is it really worth children going back for just these few weeks?
I mean, I'm a mum, so part of me is desperate to get my kids back to school, if I'm honest. I've got my boys going back to A-level final year and GCSE final year, so it's critical for them. I've gone off how they feel, and they feel desperate to get back. My youngest son started school yesterday and just wanted to see his friends, wanted to socialise, wanted to feel that that whole change that they've got used to was returning to something that reminded them of normal. I appreciate that parents have got some anxieties, and I appreciate that other parents don't. You know, a lot of parents actually are really desperate to get their kids back to school. But I guess it's just trying to get parents to see that the global experience of a child going to school, having time with their peers, having that bit of independent learning before they break up for the summer holidays, getting them back into that routine and familiarising themselves with the environment, that's really more the psychological reasoning behind it, because obviously it's a long break and they've been at home for a very long period so far. So just creating that break where they realise, actually, this is something I'm returning to, reminding them of the experience of the actual workplace at school, and also just reconnecting them with teachers and peers, I think that's really important. And I think that most parents in the UK at the moment are just desperate to get that back to normal.
Yes, I've got two children myself. I must admit, you know, I'm looking forward to when they're back at school.
Oh, yeah, so me too.
Yes, happy day. But yes. Some parents, as you say, are anxious about that.
Yes.
Some children anxious about that too. What kinds of things should we be saying to ourselves and to our children to allay those fears?
Because I work with lots of people who've had things like health anxiety in the past and problems around those kind of thoughts regarding germs, for example. One of the things that we have to do through therapeutic intervention is help people see that you're always facing bacteria and viruses. It's just part of life. It's why you have a healthy immunity. So getting kids back to school is just about giving them more of what they're used to, which is an experience where they're healthy, they're young, they're fit. We know that that means that they're going to be able to deal with the environment effectively. They're at very low risk. But most importantly, that reminds them that this is being human. You know, part of being human is sometimes we do get poorly, but that shouldn't stop us living. In fact, that should be the very thing that makes us wish to live more, because there is a finite experience on this earth. When it comes down to anxiety and fear about returning, I think the most important reassurance that a parent can give a child and themselves is that you have to confront your fears to overcome them. So you actually have to, unfortunately, expose yourself to the thing that concerns you and makes you anxious for you to make peace with it. And even though that can feel really troubling in the very beginning, very quickly you adapt. And if you think about how we were a few months ago, if you'd have told me, firstly, how well behaved we'd have been in the last few months and how we'd have adapted to this new normal, I would have really thought that was completely insane, because it goes against everything that's human. We're not meant to be in our houses on our own or in our houses with small groups. We're meant to be social creatures. So we've done an incredibly good job at abiding by those rules and regulations for the most part. And now, if we are going to believe that we are trusted what we've trusted in the past, we therefore have to trust this new part of that phase. We can't say, well, I trusted it when they told us to stay in our houses. If we're being told to trust to go back to school, that must be for the same reasoning. So if we've adapted on one level initially to the rules and regulations, maybe it's time to just reassert that trust and go, it is time to get back. I'm worried about kids that haven't been at school. I worry because my background isn't about working with privileged children who maybe have great parents and don't have any concerns about their well-being and have been home educated. My concerns are about the kids that I've been working with in the past, where they don't have that at home, they don't have a structure at home. We don't want the gap to widen any further. There are enough gaps in the UK anyway. So trying to get kids back into that sense that this normal is returning, and reminding kids from, shall we say, more challenging backgrounds that those teachers who care for them are still there, and that that food that they're going to get on a daily basis when they do return after the summer is going to be available to them, and so on and so forth. That's a really reinforcing message for those children. And I think that we have to remember, as a society, our job is to look after the most challenged of the challenged, and we need to take care of those, and that's why school is the best place to do so. So I think that parents also need to kind of see that this is about our united society doing things that are right for kids everywhere from every background. And from my point of view, teachers are incredible. Schools are, you know, privileged beyond measure that we just are so fortunate to have in the UK. And getting kids back there to just enjoy that sense of safety and routine, I just think it's really helpful for their mental health.
I know that one of the things that my children are scared about is not necessarily the social distancing, actually, but an awareness that maybe they shouldn't have done as much work as they might have done while they've been off school. They haven't done all the online lessons that have been sent to them. And that suddenly this is all going to be exposed somehow when they get back at school, and there's going to be an obvious differential between those children who really have put in the work and those who maybe, for whatever reason, haven't.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that a lot of children have anxiety about that, because if you have a parent like myself, I work all the time, so I don't have time to home educate you. So a lot of parents recognise that even if they're, you know, really care about their children, they're really engaged in their children's lives, that just doesn't translate to the fact that you've been able to home educate them. And also, I wouldn't have a clue how to home educate my sons on things like GCSE maths or A-level biology. It's just not my field. And I think that that shows, even when they're given all the opportunities in the world, they're going to have a differential to a child who's maybe had a parent at home who's been able to really dedicate that homeschooling environment to them. And likewise, there are some children whose parents have skills for life who won't be able to even think about doing that. So there is going to be a gap. And I think that that's one of the fears that the government have at the moment, is that we don't want a bigger gap arising. But children who haven't done any work, why should you? You're not there as a child to know how to home educate yourself. So you shouldn't feel guilty, and any parent should be telling a child who's just done nothing, that's completely okay, because you wouldn't have the first clue how to manage that. I mean, which child on the whole independently learns at 12, 13, 14? We look to our educators to do that. That's why teachers are so pivotal and paramount in our kids' lives. So I think it's just important to remind them that all the work that they haven't done will be recovered. I know that in my child's schools and colleges, they've been advised of that, that every piece of work that's been sent in the holidays or this time during the period that they've been locked down, they will basically be recovering it. And I think Ofqual, obviously, they're going to be exploring how to make this a better level playing field. And it's on the duty of parents as well to make sure that they're happy with whatever kind of decisions are made around that. Because I think we all have to remember, as parents, you know, we have a very powerful voice and they're our children. So we want to make absolutely sure that our kids are given the best representation and the best opportunities. And that's on us to make sure that we speak loudly enough if we don't feel happy with some of that.
Thanks, Emma. Thanks, Emma. Good advice. Emma Kenny there, psychologist. Lovely to talk to you today,
Take
Emma.
Care now.
Thank you. Cambridge 105.